In Revelation 21:1, the New Heavens and New Earth verse, the King James Version states there was no more sea. The NASB says there is no longer any sea, and the ESV says the sea was no more. Does this mean that there are no oceans or seas or large bodies of water in the New Heavens and New Earth, or in the kingdom? Or is this overstating the case? Stay tuned for an explanation of this verse. Hi there, I'm Lee Brainerd. Welcome to Soothkeep and another edition of Prophecy in the Crucible. My mission is truth, truth at any cost, truth above every other consideration. Now, the truth we're trying to grasp after today is the proper understanding of the phrase there is no more sea or there was no more sea in Revelation 21:1. Many prophecy teachers insist that the phrase there was no more sea in Revelation 21:1 means that there will be no oceans, no seas, and no large bodies of even fresh water in the new heavens and the new earth. Now, this point is based simply on the apparent clarity of the statement here in this verse. There, no effort is made to obtain a theological clarification or a biblical clarification of this phrase from the rest of the Bible. They simply just take this statement at its absolute sense. They don't raise the question that maybe this phrase is supposed to be taken in a relative sense. But is this handling of this verse correct? I don't think so. Well, let's look at an example of a strong statement in the Bible, which the Bible itself proves must be taken in a relative sense and not an absolute sense. The example that I'd like to use is that the Bible says there will be no more mountains. We see this in Revelation 6:14, in Revelation 16 verse 20, and in Isaiah chapter 54:10. And yet we know that there will be mountains in the new heavens and the new earth. The Bible gives us numerous arguments in this direction. For instance, we know that there will be many streams flowing from mountaintops and hilltops. We see this in Isaiah chapter 30, verse 5. And we know that Jerusalem will be exalted above all the other hills. We see this in Isaiah chapter 2, verse 2, and in Micah chapter 4, verse 1. We also know that the hills are going to flow with milk and honey. We see this, for instance, in Joel chapter 3, verse 18. And we see clarifications that require a relative sense instead of an absolute sense. For instance, Isaiah 40, verse 4 says, "Every mountain and hill shall be brought low." Now, every mountain and hill being brought low is not the same thing as every mountain ceasing to exist. So we are forced to conclude that the sense of there shall be no more mountains can't be absolute. It has to be relative. So relatively speaking, the understanding that we're going to be forced to take is that the big mountains are going to become small mountains, the small mountains are going to become hills, and the big hills are going to become little hills. This raises the question, does the Bible give us any indication at all that the phrase no more seas should be taken in a relative sense rather than an absolute sense? And yes, it does. I'm going to give you 9 arguments from the Bible why the no more seas in the new heavens and the new earth must be taken in a relative sense. First of all, the text doesn't actually say seas, it says sea. We have a definite article here with a noun, and now definite articles with a noun often refer to a particular instance of a local reference. For instance, we see the phrase the river in the Bible used for the Nile River in Genesis 41:7. It's used for the Euphrates in 2 Samuel 10:16, and it's used of the Jordan River in 1 Kings 4:21. The only way you can tell what the river means is from the context. And here again, folks, I'm banging on my drum. Context, context, context. We do the similar thing in English. If you live near the Pacific coast and you talk about the ocean, you were talking about the Pacific Ocean. And if you live on the Atlantic seaboard and you talk about the ocean, you're talking about the Atlantic Ocean. And so this reference here that is to the sea, it's talking about the sea of the Middle East. In other words, it's talking about the Mediterranean. Secondly, the text here says thalassa, which is sea, not okeanos, which is ocean. If the reference was to be the ocean or to that vast network of oceans, the term would certainly have been okeanos. In classical Greek and in Koine Greek, okeanos was used for the vast ocean river that was outside of the Mediterranean. It was out beyond the gates of Hercules. This vast river ocean circled the entire globe. And it was the brave navigators would go out there and sail on its currents. They exploited the currents like rivers, which is why they called it the river ocean. And they contrasted this vast expanse of the river ocean with the sea. And the sea, of course, as I said, is the Mediterranean. Thirdly, many kingdom passages speak of a vast abundance of water in the kingdom. Isaiah 30 verse 5 says there will be rivers and streams flowing from every mountain and hill. Isaiah 35 6 says there will be waters bursting forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. Isaiah 41, 18 through 19 says that the rivers are going to bring forth heights, that the springs are going to be in the valleys, that there's going to be springs in the dry lands, and that the wilderness is going to be turned into a pool of water. And folks, all these copious flows of water are going to end up in sea and ocean basins. Fourthly, the Bible teaches the continued existence of the Western Sea, which is the Mediterranean, and the Eastern Sea, which is the Dead Sea. We see this in Zechariah 14, verse 8, and we see it in Ezekiel 47, verses 8 through 10. Both of these bodies of water are going to be revitalized by the river of living water that flows out from underneath the throne of God. On top of that, we see, fifthly, that the Mediterranean is still large enough to call a sea. We see this in Ezekiel 47:10. We see it in Isaiah 11:9. We see it in Isaiah 60 verse 5. And we see it in Zechariah 9 verse 10. And sixthly, the Mediterranean is still large enough to maintain a vast ocean fishery. We adduce this from Ezekiel 47 verses 8 through 12, where we read that the Dead Sea fishery offers the same amazing fishing for the same amazing variety of fish that are found in the Mediterranean Sea. And seventhly, the Mediterranean is still large enough for spiritual comparison. We read in Isaiah 11:9, the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord, even as the waters cover the sea. And this is a living lesson, folks, before their eyes. This is not a footnote in an old history book. Eighth, the Mediterranean is going to be large enough and still connected to the encircling ocean so that ocean-going trade will still continue and prosper. For instance, we read in Isaiah chapter 60, verses 5 and 9, that the Gentile lands are going to bring their wealth to Israel via cargo ships. Ninthly, the Mediterranean is still going to be large enough to use as the western border for several tribes. We see this in Ezekiel 45:15, in plus verses 17 through 20, and we see it in Ezekiel 48:28. Now, these nine arguments force us to the conclusion that the phrase "no more sea" must be taken relatively and not absolutely. In other words, those who knew the Mediterranean Sea before the Second Coming are going to be amazed at its vast reduction in size. Former seaside towns are going to be miles away. The Great Sea is no longer going to be the colossal sea that men feared. It could be one half or one third or even one quarter of its size as far as square surface miles of water. But it's still going to be large enough for ocean-going vessels and for a vast fishing industry. But it's going to be shrunken enough in size that men are going to say, wow, the Mediterranean is gone. Now, I developed this argument on No More Sea much more fully than I did here in this video in my book, The New Heavens and the New Earth. This book is definitely worth the read if you're interested in questions like this that pertain to the millennium and the new heavens and the new earth. Now, some insist that these kingdom observations are invalid. They claim that after the 1,000 years, the current heavens and earth are going to cease to exist and God is going to make a second ex nihilo, new heavens and earth. They base this thought entirely on Revelation 21:1. I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and also there was no more sea. So in their mind, the new heavens and new earth in the eternal kingdom are very much distinct from the current heavens and earth and the heavens and earth in the 1,000-year kingdom. And so on the basis of this argument from Revelation 21:1, they say, quoting dozens of passages on the millennial kingdom does not invalidate no more sea in Revelation 21:1. And they claim, okay, the seas may well exist during the 1,000-year kingdom, but after the 1,000 years, when we have the new heavens and the new earth, there will be no more sea, and no more sea there is to be taken in an absolute sense. Now, my response to this argument based on Revelation 21:1 is that the claim that the current heavens and earth are going to cease to exist and be replaced by an ex nihilo new heavens and new earth is a position that has never been proven. I think this whole position is based on a misunderstanding of Revelation 21:1 and a misunderstanding of its place in the context in the flow of Revelation. Now, there are actually a number of arguments from the Bible which demonstrate that the current earth is eternal. In other words, the current earth will never cease to exist. And there are many arguments that the kingdom established by the Lord at his second coming is his eternal kingdom. I have developed many of these arguments in this book, The New Heavens and the Earth. And if you're interested, this book is available in paperback, in Kindle format, Barnes & Noble format, Apple iBooks format, and a number of other formats. But I'm going to give you two of the arguments right now just to wet your whistle. The first one is that many passages teach that the kingdom established by the Lord at his second coming is eternal. For instance, in 2 Samuel 7, verses 12 through 16, we read that your house, your kingdom, and your throne are forever. We read similar things in Daniel 2:44, in Daniel 7:27, in Micah chapter 4, verses 6 and 7, in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 7, and in Revelation chapter 11, verse 15. Now, if the kingdom and the house and the throne are eternal, then the principles and the changes introduced at the second coming are eternal. The second argument is that many passages teach that the earth itself is eternal. For instance, in Ecclesiastes 1:4, we read, the earth remains forever. And in Psalm 104, verse 5, we read, who laid the foundations of the earth, that it should not be removed forever. In other words, it's never going to be removed. And in Psalm 78:69, we read, the earth, which he has founded forever. We read similar thoughts in Psalm 119, verse 90, Psalm 93, verse 1, and in 1 Chronicles 16, verse 30. Now, if the earth is eternal, and there is no removal of the earth at the end of the 1,000 years that will give us a different earth that has no sea, then the kingdom passages that say there is no more sea, that mean no more sea in a relative sense, mean no more sea for eternity in a relative sense. So what are the new heavens and the new earth? The new earth is an earth that's refurbished by fire and earthquake at the second coming. We see this fire and this earthquake in many second coming passages. And the analogy for the new earth that's merely refurbished by fire and earthquake is the refurbishment of the earth after the flood. It gave us a new earth. For instance, in 2 Peter 3, we see the world that was prior to the flood, the world that is right now, that's post-flood, after the flood, and the world that will be, which is in the future after the fire and the earthquake. Now, where do the new heavens come from? The new heavens come about with a polar shift. That polar shift is going to move Antarctica north. It's going to move Siberia south. Both are going to be in warmer climates. They're both going to be much more habitable. This polar shift, when the Earth rolls, it's also going to move one third of the northern hemisphere stars into the southern hemisphere, and it's going to move one third of the stars in the southern hemisphere into the northern hemisphere. So everybody that looks up in the heavens is going to have a new heavens. They're going to see a different set of stars. It's going to be two thirds of them will be the same, but a third of the stars they see is going to be different than they're used to seeing. Now, this brings us back to where we started with the no more sea. If the changes at the second coming are eternal, the changes in the heavens and the earth are eternal, then whatever no more sea means during the 1,000 years is exactly what it will mean after the 1,000 years. So the reduced but still glorious seas and oceans of the 1,000 years or of the millennium are going to continue for eternity. Well, this brings us to the conclusion of this study. Hopefully I've shed some light for you on the meaning of Revelation 21:1, both the phrase no more sea and the phrase the new heavens and the new earth. And hopefully I've shed some light for you on the proper method of interpreting scripture. One of the biggest shortcomings that we have in the realm of Bible prophecy is superficial investigations. Folks, reading a couple books or watching a couple videos that more or less agree with you is not investigation. That's bias confirmation. Don't be afraid to read books or watch videos that challenge your position. Iron sharpens iron. We want to let the testimony of every pertinent verse and passage in the Bible have its day in court. Now, if you are interested in the topics that I've covered here today, both the no more sea and the new heavens and the new earth, consider buying a copy of my book, The New Heavens and the New Earth. As I mentioned earlier, it's available in paperback and it's available in a number of e-versions. This book covers a wide gamut of new heaven and new earth questions, including the understanding of Revelation 21:1 in its context and the relationship between the 1,000 years and the eternal state. Well, folks, continue in the Word, continue studying, continue thinking, continue watching for the Lord, continue looking up. Soon we are going home. Eyes wide open, brain engaged, heart on fire. We'll see you next time.